This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on April 24th, 2016. Our show this week features guests Brian and Kate with me, Mike Rappin. This week's topic is focused around our attempts at creating comic books as individuals and eventually turned into how doing just that is a major endeavor. We round out the show with a discussion about indie comics, specifically at Comixology Submit, and how sometimes you just have to try something new. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin. With me this week are two fantastic people, Brian Murray.
Hello.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me. As per usual, I'm so excited that you're here. And that's not to say that I'm not always the same level of excited. I'm just, you know, this is a great thing. This is a fantastic thing we do every Wednesday, or every Wednesday, that comes out every Wednesday, that we record on Sunday. I want to apologize in advance if I sound tired or if I'm completely out of it or I lose my train of thought in the middle of this episode. It's because I flew on a red-eye flight last night back from Seattle for a work conference. So I didn't really sleep much in the last, 28, 29, 30 hours, I guess, if that's a measurable time that you would be able to understand. So yeah, I'm a little out of it. But nonetheless, we're here to talk about comic books. So I'm going to ask you two the question that I ask every single week to the people that are on this show with me. How are you and how have comic books been? I'm going to point this over to Brian.
I've been great. Comics have been equally great. This has been a big week for me. I got a couple of books I really enjoy. Captain Marvel put out a new issue. There's also the new Power Man and Iron Fist series that came out.
Oh yeah, how was that? I was hesitant about picking that up.
I thought it was really good. I've never been a big reader of either of these characters in the past, but after watching Jessica Jones, I was really curious to see more of Luke Cage, find out what he's like in the comic books.
Yeah.
And this is my
noob question. Is he Power Man?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yes.
And I've never read anything with Iron Fist before, but so far I'm really enjoying Danny Rand.
I will say, if you're interested in more Iron Fist, you should check out the Matt Fraction, Ed Brubaker run that was eventually followed up by Dwayne Szczesny on the writing teams, The Immortal Iron Fist with art by David Aja, and then eventually there's some other artists, but the first chunk of that book is Ed Brubaker, Matt Fraction, and David Aja, and it's one of the greatest Iron Fist stories you can ever read.
That sounds like an amazing team that I would take anywhere. So
yeah, I'll have to check it out.
We'll totally check that out. Is it like old enough to be found in a library maybe?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Then this is definitely happening.
Yeah, it came out a little while ago and there's these nice collected editions for that book. So I highly recommend it. I think this is where Matt Fraction met David Aja, who eventually did the Hawkeye run that everyone knows and loves.
Near and dear to my heart.
Kate, what did you read this past week?
I did not actually read that many comics this week because I am part of a really dorky comics-related book club that I love dearly, but I got behind in my books for this month, so I've been reading novels to finish up stuff for this month. But I have read some of The Last Halloween, which Nick badgered me enough about that I got it from the library and have started reading, and I'm like 3 issues in maybe.
Wait, is this the Long Halloween, or is this another book called
The... That's the one I meant.
You are correct, sir. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing like a critical Batman book.
Nope. Nick is turning really funny colors somewhere.
He certainly is, yeah. He's like, oh! No, it's... I don't know much about Batman villains, and so I've had to do a lot of Wikipedia-ing to keep up with this book, because there's so many just like quick references to people. Which kind of breaks up reading flow, so I think that's part of why I've not been super into it. But obviously, I've basically just barely started it, so get back to you on that. I also checked out Black Panther number 1, which I thought had a lot of potential, and I'm going to keep reading. And then Huck number 6 was my big one that it was the... So Huck's weird because it's an ongoing series, but it's an ongoing series of mini-series. Right now, it's 3 6-issue mini-series is what's slated. And so this was the last book of the first miniseries, and they haven't said anything, at least that I've been able to find, about how connected all the miniseries are. Like, obviously, they're all about the title character, Huck, but, like, will the next one pick up where this one left off, or will there be a big time gap or a little time gap? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Yeah.
That will be interesting to see. And I was curious how much would be tied up versus, you know, like in a normal ongoing, there's still some pretty, usually it sets you up for the next arc pretty well. There's loose threads, obviously, that are going to lead into the next thing. And this really tied everything up pretty well. Like, if it was a standalone miniseries, this would have seemed like a normal, appropriate ending for just concluding the entire thing. So it'll be interesting what happens. Little side note complaint. Mark Millar, obviously, we're really lucky that we got a book out of him that didn't have, wasn't full of scantily clad women and weird sexual violence. And it was so good for so long. And then this issue, this last one of the miniseries, had a weird, like, an AI soldier female wearing the most ridiculous, scantily clad, like, nonsense and pigtails. And I'm like, really? Who are you trying to attract, robot? Who? Tell me more. And she, like, has high heels she's running around in. And this, like, crop. It's just the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah, I think you tweeted a picture of that, and I was kind of sad.
I did. I was, because I was really annoyed when I got to that. I'm like, you came so far. Why?
You almost made it out.
Exactly. And yeah, so I guess she technically showed up in five, but like for a frame. Like, this was the first one where we see her running around in her heels, and you're just like, no. So, especially as a robot. Who are you trying to attract, robot? Whatever.
Yeah, I'm gonna just say, you remember that scene in Transformers? That's a bad one. Let's leave that alone. Forget that I even said that.
Well, what about you, Mike?
Yeah, so I am so behind on comics. Last week, I was a humongous week for me. I had 10 books come out, and the week before that wasn't that bad. And I'm just so absolutely behind. And so I was traveling this week, so I didn't have a lot of chance to read too much. But on the plane, I did manage to read One Punch Man Volume 4. I love that book to death. I don't think I need to say much more than that. If you haven't heard of this book, just look up the synopsis of what it actually is. It's One Punch Man. It's a manga. It's so funny. It's also on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken, as an anime. I finally finished Constantine the Hellblazer number 11, and boy, oh boy, I love this book. Even though Deadman showed up and I kind of got weirded out, and I don't know anything about Deadman other than now I guess he can possess people, or he has always been able to possess people, and I just learned that.
He's always possessing people.
Yeah, so that's like his shtick, and that's weird. But the book is fun. I love this comic book. I cannot express that enough. But finally, the thing that I read that was actually really interesting was a book that I picked up on a whim a long time ago. It's called Black Eyes. It's written and drawn by Claire Connolly, and it's a book that has no dialogue. It's three issues long. I bought the collected edition. I don't even know how much it went for, but it's like an independently supply or independently created book. So there's no publisher. It's published under Claire Connolly Comics. And it's this just really sad story about this man who lives alone, and people, like, he just is trying to survive, and things are trying to kill him, so he has to kill them back. And the ending of this book was just so terribly depressing, because it's not that it was anticlimactic, it ended in just the most awful way for this person. So it blew my mind, because, like I said, I picked it up on a whim. I didn't really know what it was about. I really liked the art style. It's all black and white, and it's really gritty, and I can't recommend it enough. I can't really find the right words to explain this book, but if you could pick it up on Comixology, I believe it's a digital-only book, but it's written by Claire Connolly and drawn by her, and it's really, really interesting. So I definitely recommend it.
If you want to be sad, that's the book for you.
Yeah, okay. It's. I don't even know if I was like so much sad as I was like, just I felt weird at the end, but in a good way, because the conclusion was so final and harsh.
And you never get that from a comic book.
Yeah. Well, there's always like the what if, what happens next.
Yeah.
Whereas
exactly.
This just felt like there was a final ending. Like there was nothing more that could be done with this book.
Because
I really
it's
like
not
that.
From the big three, you know, it is actually the ending. They're not gonna
pick it
back up in 6 months with a different writer and a different artist or something.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Brian, what was your one thing you were really excited about this
past week?
Sorry, we skipped over that part, moved right into Kate.
Number one for me was the Dresden Files, wild card number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new original Dresden Files miniseries, and Mike, as you well know, the Dresden Files has always been my problematic fave.
Yeah, yeah.
To use internet terminology. There's a lot wrong with it in some ways, but I love it so much. And this seems like it's going to be a really cool urban fantasy slash mystery story.
As per usual with the Dresden Files, you know.
Yeah, I knew exactly what I was going to get when I signed up for it. And so far, issue one did not disappoint. It gave you, here's the characters you know and love. Here's an introduction to the weird case that he's going to be picking up. Here's the cliffhanger ending. See you in issue number two.
Yeah. It's funny. I, for some reason, this was totally off my radar, so I'm glad that you mentioned it this week, because I picked up the last miniseries that they did. That was pretty okay, but I'm like in the same Dresden Files boat as you. Like, if there's more of this book series or more of this universe, I want to read it. So I definitely picked up this first one when I saw that it was on our list today. So, you know, let's just move on. We'll move on to our comic picks for this upcoming week. So let's go right back to you, Brian. What are you excited for this upcoming week?
I'm very excited to actually get my hands on my copy of Extraordinary X-Men number 9.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if that was delayed for everybody or if it was just my comic shop didn't get their copies for some reason.
That came out last week, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, so it shouldn't. I mean, I got my digital copy.
Yeah, I got it in digital, but also jumped off that ship at the end of the last arc.
Oh, man.
It just was not doing it for me.
I love it to pieces. I'm all about weird alternate timelines, mm-hmm. which is probably why Marvel and X-Men in particular do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff gets weird real fast, and I'm all about that.
Well, that's exciting. That's one of those books that I usually would read right away, but I just never got around to reading it last week because, like I said, I was just totally out of my element. But, Kate, what are you excited for this upcoming week?
I am excited for, so we discussed a little bit before the show if it will actually come out or not, but we're thinking yes, X-Files number 1. This is their new series by the same people, again, Joe Harris and Matthew Dow Smith, who are the writer-artist team that did season 10 and season 11 of the X-Files comics. But this one takes place after the last miniseries that was on TV. So it's a new continuation of the story, which I'm excited for. But it's been backed up a couple times now. So hopefully this is the real deal. This isn't a false alarm.
So let me tangent a little bit. Were you a big fan of the miniseries that came out?
I thought it was good. I mean, I'm always down for more X-Files. Yeah, the things I didn't like were more casting issues than anything. Like the Agent Einstein rubbed me so far the wrong way. With her Shatnering her whole performance. I'm like, oh my God. She just overacted so badly, and it was so annoying.
That's the best way to describe it.
I haven't watched live TV in years, and I tuned in for that. So.
Wow.
Okay.
And I did every week. So, I mean, like, clearly I enjoyed it. But I also really like the X-Files comics. So I'm just, in general, when we get more of those, I'm like, yay! So...
I jumped ship off that show when they had the episode with the guy who turned into a lizard and was actually a lizard who was turning into a guy.
Right? What? Oh, come on. That was great.
Super funny and weird, but that was the point where I was like, all right,
I don't know. It reminded me so much of like 7th season X-Files, like that kind of irreverent tone. Yeah, it was great.
Maybe I stopped because I wanted that to be my last memory of the show. I'm not sure.
That's fair.
Mike, you should probably at least watch that episode.
The big thing with the miniseries, so like, if we're going to go into this, is that so many of the themes of X-Files don't work in modern age. Like, with our in a post-Snowden era, if you will. Like, Mulder's whole conspiracy theory stuff, like, that's not so crazy anymore. Like, mm-hmm. Big Brother is watching you, and these things are happening. You know what I mean? So
yeah, yeah.
Then there were parts of the show too, like he's carrying around a smartphone. I'm like, Mulder would never carry a smartphone.
Yeah, Mulder would still have the Nokia phone, you know.
Yeah, well, and that's a whole other thing. So yeah. How about you, Mike?
Well, for me this week, I'm actually really excited for a book that is. The more and more I read it, the more problematic it seems, but that almost makes it exciting. It's a book called Sex, written by Joe Casey with art by Peter Kowalski. And this book, I've been saying this since issue 4. Like, I don't know where this book is going, and that is the most exciting part of this story. Joe Casey, as a writer, is very interesting to me because a lot of his books are just okay. Some of his books are bad. Some of his books are incredibly like out there, but so very, very good. And Sex has constantly been one of those books on the edge of just okay and fantastic for me. And he's done so many things really right in this book. And he's also done so many things very wrong that I'm like hooked into this ride and I can't get off because there's unfinished storylines. It feels like they've resolved the primary conflict of this book, but in doing that, they've opened up a bunch of doors that ask a lot of questions that you weren't even thinking about. And if you go back and read earlier issues, like I did at one point, it's kind of beautiful the way that he's crafted this book. But it's all very explicit. It's all very sexually oriented, but not in like a pornographic way. It's in a way that makes you realize like sex is a big part of life in general. And usually we hide behind doors and behind, you know, under blankets and all this different stuff. And this book puts it right in front of you as part of the main story. And I'm just constantly perplexed by how they managed to do that and not make it seem like overly erotic. And so that being said, there are actually very good, well-crafted storylines in this book as well. I mean, if that wasn't already obvious. So I'm really curious to see how this story plays out for a lot of characters so far with the gangs that are in this book, with the main character, Simon Cook, and his secret background of being a superhero at one point, because this is kind of a superhero story. And
his powers.
We don't really know if he had powers or if he was like a Batman style character.
Okay.
And it's been more and more implied that he was like a Batman type of character who just protected this city from people with actual powers.
Okay.
And he retired and he came back to the city as his alter ego and he's like, I'm done being I can't remember what the superhero's name is now. But his protege is trying to get back into the superhero gang, and by doing that, he's trying to destroy all the gangs in the city. So he infiltrates one, and meanwhile, like all of his old arch nemesis are like, they're like, oh well, this our superhero enemy is gone. Now we can actually take over the city. So Simon Cook, the kind of one of the main characters. It used to be just about him. Now it's actually about a plethora of characters. But he's trying to fight back against crime and corruption through legitimate means with the company that he owns. And yeah, this book, it's been on delay. It's been on hiatus for 4 months. So I'm really thinking that either they're coming to a close or maybe they're just getting right back on track because Peter Kowalski, who does art, I think he was off doing other side projects. And now I think he's back on the book for good and they're going to just finish the series over X number of issues. Like, I'm not certain how long this book is going to go. But at month after month, issue after issue, I'm always like, yeah, this book is really cool. It's a very interesting read, to say the least.
Okay.
So it's really weird. I don't know. I picked this book up on a whim because I like Joe Casey as a writer. And I was like, wow, their title is very much what the book is about. Like, it's called Sex, kidding. And it is about sex.
Yep.
I'd have too much trouble not making stupid jokes with a book like that.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, yeah. Sex was great this week.
Oh, God. You know, that never crossed my mind.
I've been really disappointed in sex lately.
I don't know where this sex is going.
Oh, I've said that.
That was the weirdest sex yet. So our topic this week was originally supposed to be about fan fiction, but because of weird scheduling things, we actually couldn't get all of the hosts together, and Brian magically stepped in because he's a fantastic human being so that we could talk about, have you ever tried to create a comic book? Or that question of, have the three of us ever tried to sit down and actually write or draw a comic book? And I can easily start the conversation here with, I've written probably 4 or 5 scripts, but nothing has come of it. So let me ask the two of you, have you ever sat down and actually tried, or have you looked into what it takes to create a comic book?
I've looked into it. I have perused and then been horrified by Image's guidelines for submission, in that you have to have a complete team You don't need a colorist. They can assign that, but you need an artist to go with you.
Right. So it'll just be Jordy Belair.
Put the total kibosh on it.
Yeah, right. Jordy Belair, your team, and then Jordy Belair.
Exactly. And they straight up say on their page, like, if you don't have a team together, we recommend that you go talk, you know, submit your script or whatever to Marvel or DC, the people who will put teams together. And that is just, yeah, they straight up say that. Their page about it, their submissions page, is actually kind of hilarious and should be read by anyone because it's funny and interesting to see what people go through to get their stuff put
up. I'll throw that on the show notes for this week because I think I've read that through a couple times and I think over the years it's changed in varying ways to say, I mean, it's always
sassy.
It's always been, you know, Image's policy to say you need to have a team together. You need to be able to show us 5 pages of fully ready to go book, even if it's just black and white. And you need to have a full story. Like, you can't just walk into this book without an ending. You have to actually know how your book is going to end because Image isn't in the business, I think, of, you know, writing books that have no direction or that'll go on hiatus
forever.
Endless
ongoings, yeah.
And of course, you know, Image is the publisher that I think we go to that has a lot of books that go on hiatus because of one reason or another, and that's usually because of something that's like personal, like a creator has a problem or they need more money to work because their independent book isn't selling.
Sure.
So, you know, they'll take a break or something.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, Image's submission policies are pretty high up there. I know that Dark Horse's is a little bit more lenient in the sense that you can write a script and submit it and they'll try to match you with a you know, an artist and a colorist and all that stuff.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, or at least it used to be. Maybe I need to refresh myself, but I think a year or two back that was their policy, and if I'm not mistaken, it's still like that. But I think it's definitely to your benefit to come to Dark Horse with a pitch with an artist ready.
Yeah.
To say, you know, we don't have to wait and try to find someone. We can actually just get this book going. Which is why I think creators like, you know, Brian Wood, for instance, has worked with a couple of the same artists on books through Dark Horse, simply because it's like, hey, we work together, we know how to do this, we've been talking about it, let's do this book. And Dark Horse goes, well, you two sell really well, or you're ready to go, so let's publish this book.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Brian, have you sat down and ever tried to, you know, create a comic book in one way or another, whether it's drawing or writing?
Yeah, I tried to write a couple of different things. Only one project ever really got legs, but we never even got to the point of trying to submit it. It was more just kind of a fun screw around with your friends sort of thing that I did in college. Which, you know, Mike, you would know something about, given that you were one of Seth's friends.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was We Three Kings at some point.
We Three Kings, written by Mike Rappin, Brian Murray, and Jonathan Francois.
Yeah, John, who's also on the podcast sometimes.
Who was drawing it?
No, we didn't get that far.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, I think that seems to be the struggle in a lot of this, is when you're trying to create a comic book, it's finding an artist, or you just go the route of, you know, like a Brian Michael Bendis, and you say, I want to do comic books so bad that I will write and draw this thing, even though it's horrible, just to prove that I can actually create a comic book. And you know, at the end of the day, Brian Michael Bendis' art isn't god-awful, but it is definitely far from the people that he ended up working with on future books, such as Powers or other indie books that he did.
I didn't know he ever actually drew his own stuff.
Yeah, if you look back at if you go to like his wiki page or you go to his website even, Jinx World, he has a whole list of all the books that he used to do. And he's even got to the point where he just has scripts on his website that you can read. So if you ever need to see what the script format is, like for various publishers, he's got all of that.
That is hands down my favorite back material that you find in trades sometimes are when you get script pages. I love those.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's actually one of the more interesting parts of collecting books in trade format, as well as, you know, Transformers versus G.I. Joe, which is, you know, a fan favorite or a favorite of this podcast. Every single issue of that book, every single issue of that book has, you know, commentary and pieces of script and art direction from the two creators that are on the book. So John Barber and Tom Scioli, they go through and they break down the entire book for you in the back of each issue of Transformers as a G.I. Joe, which is insane to like have that insight into the creative process, which I think helps a lot of creators. You know, if you can see how other people are doing, you know, or working on their process to create their books, you can either, you know, copy them, or you can, you know, kind of tweak their format to make it work for you.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing, is being able to look at it and saying, well, look, this is a format that got approved and that got made into a comic book.
Exactly.
So if I'm going to try and write a comic, if I format it like this, at least I know that if I'm being rejected, it's not because my formatting sucked.
Yeah. It's not like you're opening up a Word document and just kind of typing out, you know, paragraphs and panel guessing and stuff like that. But I mean, script format, if we're actually talking about script format, varies wildly from writer to writer, from publisher to publisher. Mm-hmm. It changes all over the place. For instance, some of this we may have already covered on the show, so I apologize, but for instance, Brian Lee O'Malley, who wrote and drew the Scott Pilgrim series, his other book Seconds came out. I think he had mm-hmm. another book called Lost at Sea. And for Scott Pilgrim, the way that he wrote that book was he actually formatted it like a television or a movie script. And then since he was also the artist on the book, he could break down the script into panels based on dialogue, based on, you know, description of the scene, based on action. So for him, his process is wildly different than the vast majority of other people. But it worked, and Oni Press was okay with that because they knew that they were getting a finished product out of him.
Yeah.
And whereas usually I think the way that scripts are formatted is, you know, it's broken down panel by panel. There's description of the panel. You lead the artist into saying, you know, here's what I think is happening in the page. And maybe you give the artist a little bit more freedom to say, you don't have to follow my panel format if you think the story flows better in an artistic way, as long as, you know, we're still covering the basic beats. You know, at the end of the page, the action that we described or the thing we're trying to do in that page still actually happens, then you and I are, you know, totally good. And you know, Nick and Paul, I think, talk a lot about how Greg Capullo and Scott Snyder on Batman, you know, they have such a cadence that their descriptions and the way that the panels are formed and stuff it's so laid back because they've worked together for so long. They know how the other one thinks. So when, you know, Scott, I'm guessing that the scripts for that book has to be very, very minimal at the end of the day, because They just say, you know, Batman does this, and it's like, okay, we got the whole page laid out. We know how these two characters are going to interact or how the dialogue's going to work into the page. And that blows my mind, to have that kind of cadence with another person in a creative endeavor.
Absolutely. And what I think is really interesting, too, is you see so some writers will have, like, really detailed descriptions of what you're seeing visually on the page, and then others, like, I love when Marguerite Bennett posts sections of her script because they're hilarious. They're just all about the feeling of it. So she's like, and there she is, Amanda fucking Waller, and like going into this, like, she's the baddest, but you've never seen, like, kind of thing. But it doesn't actually describe what you're seeing so much, and it's more left to, like, this is the feeling I want, artist, please make it happen. And Snyder will do that too with the Batman stuff with Capullo. He's like, this is the, you know, old thing. You have three pages, go for it.
Yeah.
So, after seeing all the Batman v Superman reviews, this is the most important time in the world to tell which Snyder you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, Scott, no, Snyder. The good one.
The good one.
Yeah. And, you know, there are plenty of resources out there online for maybe anyone that's interested in creating a comic book, you know, to research, you know, how to write a script properly, how to talk to an artist that you may not know personally to get your message across, and like what you should and shouldn't do. You don't want too much action in a panel. You don't want too many panels on a page. You don't want to bog down the artist to the point where they can't be creative with what they're doing, but you still need to be descriptive enough to say, here's what needs to happen on the page. Right. And you see that. I know that, like, Jim Zub, for instance, and Charles Soule, and Brian Michael Bendis, like I said before, Warren Ellis, Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, all of these pretty big name writers, as far as I'm concerned, they have these scripts out online that you can go to their websites, or you can go to, there's a comic script archive website that was pretty active for a while that would get scripts from all these different people, and they would have
put that in the links too.
Yeah, I'll put all this in the show notes. That they would have links to all these different scripts, and you could see the wildly changing format that each of these writers would take to try to, you know, get their comic out. And like Alan Moore, for instance, would give you an entire page of prose basically describing a scene that would lead up to like one panel and then the later page. Or you get someone like Warren Ellis, who's using one-line blurbs to just describe something and is leaving all of the imagination to the artist, provided, you know, the story can be told. And usually when you do that, I think you probably end up with a better product. And so it's really cool to see how these whole things work. Like Brian Michael Bendis' stuff that he did the first time he worked with Lemuel Yu, he, you know, wrote this big long paragraph at the beginning saying, "Hey, I write a full script. I'm really excited to be working with you. He's like, I want you to go into this knowing that what I say here is very fluid." And it's really cool to just to see that. I'm always really impressed when I read a new script that I can find online and it has that kind of stuff. So yeah. I'll post a bunch of these links so that everyone can take a look at that. But so if you two are still interested, you know, definitely yeah. this yeah. would be the resource.
Well, I think that's a super important thing to bring up is that writing comics or creating comics is a collaborative effort. Like if you, as somebody who's trying to write a comic, tries to sit down and tell the artist like exactly what they need to draw in every single panel, it's probably not going to be very good because yeah, you don't have their...
It's not a creative team at all.
Exactly. And you don't have their
instincts.
You're just
using them as a pencil factory.
Like they are the ones who do this for a living in some situations. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of got to trust your artist to know what's best. If
yeah,
you try
absolutely.
To fight with them, it's going to be to the detriment of your book.
Yeah, and it's almost a question of, like, if you know so well how this is supposed to be drawn, then why aren't you drawing it yourself? Or at least
yeah,
trying
exactly.
to, you know?
Well, let me show you my stick figures and you'll understand.
Yeah. But, I mean, storyboarding like that isn't actually impossible, isn't something you necessarily should avoid, because if you have a very distinct idea for like a specific page or maybe a splash page or something like that, which is, you know, for sake of clarity, a splash page being like a two-page widespread of a giant action scene or a giant something happening, if you have a distinct idea, I don't think that there's any... It's not the wrong thing to do by like saying, here's how I think this should be laid out. And if your artist goes with it, that's great. But if they don't, you know, you at least know that you communicated with that person, because it's obviously this whole big thing is about communication.
Absolutely. 100%.
So when it was between my junior and senior year of high school, I spent the summer at Northwestern University going to their film camp, and I went for screenwriting. Mm-hmm. And so we'd spend like half a day all day doing classes for this stuff. And I find it really interesting the difference between, because there's obviously a huge similarity between writing a screenplay and writing a comic book. You're both writing scripts for what is ultimately a visual narrative, but there are pretty significant differences.
So I guess if to come back to the first, you know, question that I asked, seeing that you two said you've tried, I guess what is really stopping you? Is it just finding an artist? Or I know for me, it was a matter of, I knew that I wanted to create something, but I was worried that if I got into it too far, I wouldn't actually have the time for it, because it's a big thing. It could be a large chunk of your time if you were actually trying to produce a month-to-month comic or something like that. So was there anything else that was blocking you, or was it just finding an artist?
So mine was exclusively after reading how submissions work kind of thing, and figuring out that I didn't have the artist, and that from everything I've read, writing something without knowing the artist you're writing it for, like, or at least the type of thing, like, can be kind of problematic or tricky. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Lots of people say they write their scripts completely differently depending on who they're working with. And so that was, since I was already kind of on the fence between doing a script versus doing prose, I was like, that just pushed me the other direction.
Gotcha.
And that being said, I have barely started that anyway. I feel like everyone has the novel or the script they're working on. Literally everyone.
Yeah.
What's really impressive is not having the ideas or starting it. It's the impressive people are the ones that actually finish a script. Like, I don't care if you get published. If you finished a whole thing, that is, you are in the vast minority. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what always stopped me was the commitment level. Not so much that, like, I couldn't finish, it's not that I couldn't finish the arc that I was thinking of, it's that in my mind, comics are an ongoing thing, and I don't think that I necessarily have the stamina to, you know, put out an issue of The Amazing Spider-Man every month until yeah. Marvel is sick of how I write Spider-Man.
Well, wait, this brings up a good point. Would you want to be like creating your own thing, or would you be more interested in working with pre-existing characters? Like, that's another thing with jumping in. It's like you basically have to come to the table with your own unique stuff, and then if you're good enough at that, then you get, at least from what I can tell, my experience here is just looking at Google stuff, so.
I would definitely much rather write my own thing, because I don't know. I feel like the pressure would be too great for me to write something that already exists.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. As much as I love the X-Men, I don't think I could write the X-Men.
I wouldn't be able to shake the feeling that I was writing fan fiction either. Like,
oh yeah, yeah. That kind of ties into the topic another next episode, week.
But it's all it's just licensed fan fiction.
Yeah.
The other big thing that stopped me, to be completely honest, is following all these female creators on Twitter and Tumblr. Yeah. And they're screen capping the comments they get and all the rape threats and death threats. And I'm like, holy shit. And just like how they're treated, especially the people that work at DC. This does not sound like a thing I want to be a part of. Thank you. So,
yeah. And that's such a shame because the women creators in comics are the ones who are putting out the best work a lot of the times.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And obviously, like, they're awesome to do it anyway and stand up to that. And I feel like maybe at a different point in my life, I could be okay with, you know, ignoring stuff and blah, blah, blah. But there's
putting
just
yourself
right
out
now,
there
I
and
have,
trying. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I have enough crap going on right now. Let's forget that.
Yeah. Like being willing to put up with all those downsides to do this thing that you want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's, I can't say that I understand that. That's really unfortunate. Like it's almost to the point where I want to just say, Kate, but you need to just do it. You need to just fucking do it, because then you're one more woman creator out there who is like standing up. And
but then some creep sends you a picture of your front door or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, and there's stories about getting like approached at cons and stuff, and like, no thanks.
Yeah,
I don't know. More power to them, obviously, and I'm so glad that they
definitely
do it. But I have talked a tiny bit on here, but I'm already dealing with massive medical issues. I'm like, I can only have so much stress.
Yeah, I gotcha. So then the next question is: so what with what you've written, if you've written anything, if like, is there anything that you would actually potentially consider maybe turning, like, Kate, you said you had like a prose novel. Or something that you were starting on.
Let's not make this sound like more than it is. I've
oh,
got
no,
like
Kate,
three
you've
chapters.
You've got a full book series written, right? That you're just kind of
sitting
on?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, not even close. I have like an outline in a few chapters, and I've had said outline in a few chapters for like probably 9 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
But say you had an artist come along and say, you know, I'm interested. Like, would that be enough for you to maybe try turning it into a comic book script?
Probably. Like, I feel like part of what's really appealing to me about comics and creative teamwork is that it's not such a lonely endeavor.
Right.
And other people's enthusiasm can fuel your own kind of thing, and it's kind of build on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so
for
when
sure,
you're so full of that, the very stereotypical writer self-doubt, that then someone else is there to go, well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I find really appealing about scripts in general, like screenwriting or comics or whatever, is it's technically a lot less writing. I mean, like, you outline your story and then there is, yeah.
Well, there's also this idea that I've seen a couple writers do, like specifically Matt Fraction, Kieran Gillen, mm-hmm. Warren Ellis, Kelly Sue DeConnick. They do these things, they write what they call a Bible, where it's anywhere between, you know, 5,000 and 20,000 words that answers mm-hmm. any question you could potentially have about a series. So if you're creating a new book, you say, you know, I've got this Bible that can answer all my questions, and that I can, it's like a working document, you know, obviously, because you don't want to, you know, pin yourself down and write, you know, concrete.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, if I ever need to come back and say, what am I sure about this? Do I really know how to answer this question? You have this book, you have this thing that has all the answers. So you can, you know, potentially work with an editor or hand this to your artist and say, you know, how is this person supposed to look? How is this person supposed to act? What kind of facial expressions would they have? And it's all answered in that book.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I have to keep one of those for myself.
Yeah,
that's the only way that I've kept from putting glaring continuity errors in the stuff I write.
That's right. When people say they don't write with an outline of like the overall story arc and the mini stuff within it, I'm like, how? That makes no sense. Like,
yeah, it's fine for a 10,000 word short story.
Exactly. But. And I'm someone who, even with my short stories, I outline. But otherwise, I do the where you have like 10 pages of a conversation between two characters that's going nowhere. They're just chatting it up. They're just talking.
That's bad.
That's called slice of life comics, right? Isn't that what that is?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God. Well, and even like if you compressed a comic, like if you were just writing it, like I feel like entire story arcs of comics would essentially be short stories, because it takes longer to tell the same story when you're doing it visually.
Definitely, yeah.
It is, feels like, and maybe it's not. Obviously, it has this whole other visual element, and getting it in collaborative work brings, definitely brings its own challenges to the table, because you might not always agree, which sounds a little stressful. but it definitely seems slightly less intimidating.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally understand that.
I don't know. So from looking at Images thing, they want a one-page synopsis of the overall story. Not a single issue. So we want the entire synopsis of the story arc or series, and then at least 5 pages of the art. And I know from looking at publishers for books, it's the same thing. They want a pitch, essentially, a pitch letter, and then max, like, 5 chapters. Sending in your entire thing just gets it thrown away, mostly. Yeah. Almost everybody says, like, don't do that. We don't have time or space or... whatever.
I mean, Dark Horse's, you know, submission guidelines are similar. I mean, they need an agreement to say, yes, you can publish this, blah, blah, blah. They need a complete synopsis of the entire story, not omitting any unnecessary details. Omitting unnecessary details. They need a full script that you're submitting, whether it's for a short story or a single submission or the first 8 pages of the first issue of any series. All this stuff
to see the pitches for some of my favorite series. Like, can you imagine what the pitch for Sex Criminals would look like? That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, so they have this superpower, okay?
Well, that was the cover, an alternate cover to Sex Criminals number 4, I think it was. And I own this one because it's the funniest, like, thing ever. But it's an email from Matt Fraction to Chip Zdarsky. And it's like, the subject is, what if... And the body is, we did a sex comedy about when a guy who orgasms can stop time or something like that. It's the shortest, dumbest thing, but it is so funny. I'll put a link to that in the show notes too. Just the pitch to Chip Zdarsky about how to make this, or if they could make this book.
Well, and even the ones that aren't funny, like, can you imagine the pitch for Injection trying to explain that in like a page? That must have just been insane. Like,
In my mind,
like,
Warren Ellis
issues
just,
and it still didn't make sense.
Yeah,
no.
I like to think Warren Ellis just sent a picture of the Injection logo and said, "This is happening, 2016." And Eric Stevenson was just like,
"He's got the okay. stuff behind him." Yeah,
that's true. That's a good point.
But yeah, the one other thing that's really interesting is you see people that have no other comic experience jumping into publishers like Image and Dark Horse, and it kind of just blows my mind, like. You almost have to think these people did nothing else before, and their first book, or maybe their second book, is published by Image or Dark Horse. Like, it's got to be good, right?
Yeah.
These creators, like, they wouldn't get accepted if their book wasn't good to the publisher themselves. So it's one of those things that kind of makes you want to buy unknown books only because, like, there's a reason that this book was picked up, you know. And that's some of the most exciting stuff, I think.
Definitely.
I think it'd be interesting to see, like, all those, the new artists that come onto the scene. It would be kind of cool if we could somehow find out, like, how many times was this person rejected before
right?
Yeah.
their book got picked up.
Okay, so it's my homework then to try to find some writers and artists to see, you know, to get them on the show so we could talk about this. That seems like the outcome of this, right?
I hope
somebody some listeners out there would be interested. And if you have any ideas of up and coming creators, let us know, because hey, maybe we could reach out and get them on an episode of the show.
The woman who's writing Mockingbird is brand new. This is her first comic, and she
what at Marvel?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it is insane. Like, she is really good. Just technique-wise, like, she's.
Great.
She's had, so I Googled Mockingbird, and of course Wikipedia is like, it's a bird in northern Michigan. Like, okay, that's not helpful at all.
Did you mean Atticus Finch?
anyway, I don't remember her name, but yeah, she's good. And she talks in Back Matter about essentially she's being mentored by some higher up writers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of honing her craft. But she, can you imagine how good you'd have to be to like just get hired without having any published work by Marvel?
Yeah. Well,
you know, come on the team.
I think there's something to be said about that, because usually some people like that will usually have a background in prose, or maybe they'll have a background in editing. And they'll transition from editor to writer, because I think that's a good way to break in for some people. I know, for instance, Jim McCann, who's written a couple different books. He wrote some small stuff for Marvel, and then he ended up writing Mind the Gap at Image, and mm-hmm. another book, the name escapes me.
That was a weird one.
And he started as an editor. He worked in Marvel's PR, and then I think he edited a book, and then he co-wrote a book, and then he moved over to Image and did his own thing for a little while. It's like, there are a million billion ways to break into the industry, and you know, you hear the story from every single creator, and it's different. There is no one guaranteed way to break in, But I will say that every single one of those people will say you have to create books to create books. You have to publish comics on your own. You have to get them out there, because otherwise, how else is anyone going to see your book? Like, how else is anyone going to see your, you know, ability to create? And Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, all these people, they don't necessarily take unsolicited scripts or art. They want to actually see that you can create a comic 9 times out of 10. And every single editor, every single senior person at all of these publishers will say, we want to know that you can create a book independently. That way, when we start, you know, paying you the big bucks or whatever, that you can deliver. So if you're looking to create comics, I think the first step is to just create comics on your own. You can't just assume you're going to get picked up by one of the bigger publishers. You should put them on Comixology Submit, or get them printed yourself, or do whatever you can to actually get your comic out there, even if it's a webcomic.
That is, okay, so Comixology Submit is also a very interesting thing, and Kickstarter is a way a lot of the independent.
Yeah, and Kickstarter, yeah.
So, side note, I have successfully Googled this time. It's Chelsea Kane, and looking at her Wikipedia, she is a really prolific prose author.
Okay.
She has a ton of novels, and that is how she got it.
I actually just grabbed my copy of Mockingbird number 2 off my desk to look that up, too.
She is an American novelist and columnist.
So there are plenty of platforms for independent creators to, you know, get started. And I'm sure that everyone has heard this and seen this a million times, but every single person will tell you this, and I'm only saying this because I've been to 100, not 100, but I've been to at least a dozen panels about how to break into comics, how to get into Marvel, DC, Image, Oni, Boom, Avatar. Like, they've all said, if you're going to create comics, if you want to work for us, you have to be able to do your own stuff first. So it's just do it. Just write it. Get it. Find an artist. Pay someone. Take a, you know, make your rent late and pay somebody for a month's worth of a comic or something. If you really want to do it, it's a little bit of sacrifice, I think. And I will say, Comixology Submit is actually a really cool platform, if only because if, as long as your comic book makes sense and it is a readable book, they'll pretty much take it. But I mean, in my experience, there's a whole plethora of things all over the place that Comixology Submit takes, and it's awesome. It's like you instantly have mass digital distribution for that kind of thing.
Do they have any published does Comixology put out any information about how well those actually sell, though? I've always wondered about that when I see them. I'm like, do people actually buy these?
I actually don't know what, like, the sales figures are. I mean, I don't think that's public knowledge.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But I think that, I mean, you could ask creators. I think it would probably be easier to ask those creators that put those books out. Like, just go find one. Like, the book that I mentioned earlier today, Black Eyes. I believe that that's published under Comixology Submit, and I'm sure you could reach out to Claire Connolly, and she might have a straight conversation with you and say, this book sells well or it doesn't. I know Comixology, you know, they push their independent books like that. You know, they've got a whole page for you to see their featured stuff and new stuff that comes out every week. So I don't know. That's a massive place that you can just get your book up there for free, as far as I know. I'm not really sure if there's like a cost to entry.
I would assume it's a percentage of sales.
Yeah, but is probably the same for like Image and DC and Marvel, that they take a little bit off the top. But yeah, like, why not?
I'd be willing to bet they take a lot more than a little off the top.
Yeah. That I don't know, but yeah.
So, more Twitter stuff, obviously, because that's the only really platform I follow
creators
on. There's been a fair amount of stuff recently about the lack of money creators make doing image books. Like, not aside from the wild successes like Scott Snyder's Witches, if you're just writing like a moderately successful, people have heard of it and are reading it type thing, they're saying like, oh, you, yeah, as an artist, you're getting like $14 a page, it comes down to, kind of thing. And because there's so much overhead of the publisher that it just comes down to, unless your comic is a huge success, it's hard to make rent.
Yeah.
And which these tweets are obviously in reference to people like, you should support comics and buy them.
Yeah. Well, but this is why digital distribution seems to be the way to do things if you're a indie creator, because the overhead is way lower. Like, there's no printing cost. There's no real humongous distribution cost to physically get the book somewhere. It's just on the internet for anyone. And I know, I push Comixology Submit, but there are a couple other different platforms that do this same kind of digital distribution for you to put your book up, and anyone can buy it, you know, through the PayPal or whatever yeah. payment method you want.
WordPress. So many people, like, hell, Nimona won the, National Book Award? And that started out forever as just her own website. Like, the whole first half of it was just her own webcomic.
Yeah, you look at creators like Kate Leth, for instance, who was just a webcomic artist, and now she's doing big comic books at Marvel, and she's, you know, writing actual, like, big name characters, or Patsy Walker, at least, as if I remember, that's the only one she's on. She might be on another,
she's doing Hellcat.
And so it's wild. I mean, it's totally doable. It's just a matter of, like, making that your life. This can't be a small thing you do on the side, really, unless if you're trying to actually break into the industry, it needs to be, you know, full-fledged, unless you're someone insane like Charles Soule, who's also like a lawyer full-time on top of writing comics. But I think he's like he's an anomaly.
Well, and so only because I'm the black sheep in my family, I'm the only one without a law degree. Law work can frequently ebb and flow, where you have a huge thing that's taking all your time and then nothing for a while. And so maybe he just fills in the gaps with comics.
Could be.
He's just insane and never sleeps.
I'm going to go with that one. I'm going to go with that one.
You can never rule out insanity.
Yeah.
So Nick and I have talked about this too, where you look at some of the most successful people and how they spent like years and years trying to get into it. And almost all of them have a spouse that was supporting them through all that, or parents, you know, like, so it is helpful to have backers so that you can be not destitute while you're doing all that. So, yeah.
That's where things like Kickstarter.
I feel like that kind of doesn't get mentioned, or is kind of when people are like, "Oh, you just have to really give it your all and be willing to sacrifice." I'm like, yes and no. I feel like a lot of the people, as much as they were sacrificing, they were able to do it still, because, like, Scott Snyder's wife is a freaking surgeon. He wasn't hurting for rent.
Yeah, as far as we know, yeah.
Well, yeah, he's talked about it too. Like, in his panels, he's like, no, this is why I could do this. And I'm super grateful to her and yada yada. Because it did take him quite a few years to really break in.
Gotcha.
But he's not the only, I don't remember the other examples. Nick was rattling them off. But and it's that way too for a lot of authors, where you're like, okay, this is really impressive that you wrote all this, but you were able to spend, you know, 3 years just taking improv comedy classes because your parents were paying for your car or whatever, like stuff like that. So, I don't know. Equality in America, people. Let's do this. We won't get political.
Not too much, you know.
Not too much, just a little. Our healthcare system is broken.
Just a little, just
hashtag 2016.
Yeah.
It's so insane. But
okay, hold on. If I'm going to make one more Comixology submit... suggestion.
Oh, plug it.
I have
do
to.
It.
No, I have to, because honestly, I love this book with all my heart. Heathen is the coolest Viking story you'll ever read, ever. And it's a Comixology submit book, and the woman who works on it, she writes and draws it, which blows my mind, because the level of detail she puts into some of her pages just astounds me. Her name is Natasha Alterisi.
Anyone who can just both write and draw is awful, and I hate them, because it's just not fair. You're not allowed to be talented at two things.
Well, Heathen, oh, it's so good. If I ever meet her, I feel like I need to give her a hug, because this book, like, totally changed my mind about, like, independent books. I'm like, wow, this is really, 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 really good. Maybe I should be, like, a better comic book person. And I should actually read more independent books. And, like, so now I'm constantly checking Comixology Submit and grabbing, like, random books here and there just to say I'm sampling the water, at least. And I think that's what everyone should at least try that. Like, once a week, if you've got an extra dollar, buy a digital book that from someone you don't know. If it sounds cool, just pick it up. There's no harm in doing that. And chances are, I mean, there's a good chance you'll find something good. Once a month, you'll find something good.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast. Our host and producer is Mike Rappin, and the show is edited by me, Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Skylar Spence and Infinity Shred. You can find more of Skylar Spence on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/SkylarSpence. And you can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.bandcamp.com. If you're looking for new podcasts, check out the Potter and Family hashtag on Twitter. With thousands of creators, you can find almost any type of podcast. Check out the hashtag and support small podcasts like us. You can find more of this podcast at our website, ircb.us, or wherever you find your podcasts. Let us know if you've ever tried to create a comic book yourself at ircb@destroythesaib.org. We are at ircbpodcast on Twitter, and you can find us on our subreddit, ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. And again, from all of us here at the podcast, thank you for listening.
I frequently look for the ones that there's a lot of, not a lot so much, but a fair number of publishers have competitions for submit things. And so like Top Cows just came out with their, and it was the one shot, the 13th Artifact.
Okay.
So stuff like that. I'm like, if you beat out all the, what I'm assuming are thousands of submissions, because every comic book person wants to publish a comic book. That's not true, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then that's pretty impressive. And I want to see, you know, what it looks like. But you're totally right. Like a dollar, that's like less than getting a soda. So
yeah, exactly.
Does Comixology, you know how they have the free firsts? Do they do that for submit books too?
I think they do it from time to time. I don't think it's all the time.
It's not part of the like constant section they have. Like they have that whole free section of free firsts.
Yeah, I think if you go through that section, you'll find a handful of Comixology submit books. Mm-hmm. But I can't. I mean, I'm not 100% certain.
Yeah, that's fair. That section has been super dangerous for me because I'm like, oh, it's free, it's fine. And then like $20 later, after I'm like three arcs in, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have gotten.
What did I do?
Exactly. Your sales model is too good.
Yeah, that's classic drug dealer logic, man. The first exactly, one's always free.
Exactly. I've never thought about it like that. Oh, that's so true. So yeah, first high's free.
Oh man, Boss Snake. Okay, damn it. I'm like sitting on the Comixology submit page and I'm like, oh, there's all these books that I meant to follow up on and I didn't, and I already spent too much money on the Marvel buy one get one thing. Ugh, damn it. Damn comic books.
I have this self-imposed rule where when I don't have money to spend on comics, I just don't go on Comixology's page because it's impossible. Oh, yeah. Especially with the sales at the top and you're like, gotta get it now. Time's running out.
That's how they get you.
It is. And even knowing the stuff behind that, like, God, I had classes on how to do that kind of thing. And so I'm like, I can see what you're doing, but it's still working.
It's still working on me. Yeah.
I delete most of my Comixology emails on Red. Because I know that if I open it, I'm going to buy something.
Yeah, yep, exactly.